evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Half-Ashed. My name is Craig Schneider. That gentleman, 1,850 miles, yeah, that's it, southeast of me, is Mr. Kip Fisher. And we are coming to you live for the 198th time, the 16th day of August, 2019. Mr. Fisher, how the heck are you?
I'm pretty good, I reckon. I was just catching a giggle off your description of tonight's cigar.
I wrote that like 10 minutes ago and I completely forgot about it. You know what? It's been that kind of a night.
It has. It's been a long week tonight.
Yeah, yeah. I have a new least favorite person. Whoever made the decision to kill Google Hangouts between the time that you set up the recording or the schedule for the show and we started recording, they have made my evening very poor.
I'm not a big fan of this motorcycle coming up the street right now either.
On the video, that was nearly like a gangster, like curling his lip, giving a sort of look to the camera there. Your chin is back. Oh, well. Oh, Kip.
Good well, thing we're an audio podcast, because it sounds like I can look goofy as can be.
You know, we probably sound a little different. Nobody is able to watch this live. We don't, for the first time really ever, I think, we don't have a live studio audience. There's no ongoing chat, so we have no excuses but to be paying attention tonight.
Hoy. Oh man, I got to figure out what I'm gonna say when I just get wandering off into thought. And you know, normally, I can blame it on the chat room. I don't know what I'm gonna say tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we've got a show. We've got a cigar. We have two tired hosts, and hopefully, hopefully we have a joke that makes somebody laugh tonight. Who knows? We are smoking one of your, I guess, donations, offerings, the El Rey del Mundo Choix Supreme. A fantastic, lovely little cigar. Is this the regional release for the Dominican Republic, the Vitola name El Fresco?
No, that was the plan. The antithesis of our normal smoking habits with your ancient Cuban cigars in the right off the truck and out of the shop here this summer. So they are, I didn't check box codes and I wouldn't know what to do and how to read them if I did. I just went to the shop, bought them, brought them with me to the States and sent them to you.
Well, I think this will be fun. We've done two El Rey del Mundos before now, I believe.
At least.
Two El Rey del Mundos that I've offered. I know one of them is from 1997. The other one is, I think, from 2000, maybe from 2002. So well over a decade on both those offerings. And these are probably brand new, probably rolled in 17, 18, or 19. So, thank you. It'll be awful interesting to give this a whirl.
Yeah, it'd be one of the two, awful or interesting.
That is true. Well, I had my first offering of this, I don't know, 11 o'clock this morning. I smoked the first one you had sent. What?
Stars in the same day?
I know, I'm a lucky fella. Yeah, two cigars, same day. Smoked this first one about 11 o'clock. Still breakfast and coffee time. And it did not go so well, man. It tunneled and had to be relit a bunch and did not taste like the typical El Rey profile that I know and love. So I
think that's the one intended for Bob McDuffie.
Any of the, you know, I know you'll be shocked, but here's a rabbit hole for us. I don't really go on Facebook anymore. I haven't been on much. But I still have the app on my phone. And Facebook, when you don't log in all the time, it sends you like notifications that, hey, this is happening, or hey, log in to see what this person said, or, you know, a thousand other options. Well, one of the notifications that I've received was log in to see your memory from 10 years ago, 9 or 10 years ago, something like that. And it was the last IPCPR that I was at, I believe. It's shocking to me. It was one that I worked for what was then European Cigar Cult Journal, or maybe just Cigar Journal. I don't know. It was in the middle of one of their brand changes as a photographer for them. I couldn't believe that was 2009 or 2010. So long ago. I was blown away by that. And I believe that was the trip that Bob McDuffie had his smorgasbord, when he had half a dozen Cuban cigars on a table and somebody was offering him different tastes to see whether he liked them or not. And he came away with his opinion that Cuban cigars were terrible and had bad construction.
Wait a minute. That opinion came about from one specific point in time. I thought he had just kept trying and trying and had this horrible luck and developed the opinion. No,
Bob would say that it's a lifetime of collective knowledge, but he was at a dinner with the guys who owned, or drinks, Paleo Cutter. They put a bunch of cigars on the table, lit them, and let Bob try them. Didn't even have to smoke them all. I don't know what they did with them, if he just smoked an inch and then put it down or what, but... Yeah, he went through a number of them and came to the conclusion that they were all overpriced, poorly constructed, and tasted like dirt. One evening. So.
Huh.
Yeah. So that was, I believe that was the same IPCPR. So I'm going to say it was 2009. I think that's what it said. So 10 years ago.
I got one of those notifications a few weeks ago from 2012. Or the dog watch herf.
Wow, that was 7 years ago?
Yeah.
Good gracious. Time flies, man.
Yep.
Oh, it was our anniversary when we first met.
Yes, it was.
The only time we've ever met, yeah. Other than in ones and zeros, that is.
Yeah.
Well, we are here now. We are meeting digitally for yet another episode of Half Ash, and I am happy to do so. I'm excited for tonight. We have not recorded in a few weeks. I think we've recorded once since you've been back. Is that correct?
No. We chatted and talked a couple times, but we have not recorded in over a month.
No joke. Are you kidding? Wow. Well, then the last we recorded was probably right around 4th of July. Holy guacamole. I'll keep this kid friendly for now. Damn it. Well, lots to catch up on. You are back to the Dominican Republic. You miss air conditioning. We are brothers in heat, considering the weather that we've both been experiencing.
I'm not in heat.
Wait. That came out wrong. And we're both smoking the same cigar tonight. So what we have in common is just staggering.
It is.
What?
I don't know how you're surviving the sweltering 71 degrees.
Hey, it was 76.
No, it just felt like 76. It was only 71.
In my defense, I think it was 71% relative humidity. But... We can complain about this later. I was very sweaty, okay?
I'm sure you were.
Folks, if you're not on the forum, Kip frequently in the middle of winter will post screenshots of his up-to-the-moment weather report, and he talks about how uncomfortably brisk the 66-degree weather is in Santiago at night when he's sitting outside to have a cigar.
You rarely are below 70 in the daytime.
Well, so you understand the point that Kip just feels so bad about sharing those weather updates. I sent him one today and told him that I was sweating on a job site when it was 70. He claimed 71, but he's wrong. Anyways, so that's where we're going. We are diving right into that rabbit hole. So maybe we can climb our way out and talk a bit about this Schwa Supreme.
So, yeah, because I'm pretty clueless. I did submit these for us to smoke, but I know next to nothing about them. Like I said, I picked them up off the shelf and sent them in. I don't know.
Hey, next time you are scrolling through your chat history, make sure your glasses aren't reflecting your screen as you find out that I was right.
No. It feels like 76. Looking for the actual.
Oh, this is such terrible audio. Folks, you get what you pay for. How about that?
Is it that bad again?
Is it what again?
I said, is it that bad again?
Oh, I don't know. It's not looking very good.
I don't see actual. I see feels like 76. The humidity was 71.
I think that we can probably move on to the cigar, Kip.
No, I'm looking at mine.
Lardy, do you have to get me to say, Kip, put your phone down so we can record a show?
All right, it's down. It's down.
Got
my cigars out. You didn't make my cigar go out.
Yeah. I was the one who made you scroll through that history. You are correct.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us about something I was going to ask about earlier? I saw a note about the cigar, not to confuse it with the Robusto because of the similar size. This is a Hermoso number 4?
That is correct.
Explain that to me. Because you said that was the factory Vitola. What does that mean?
So I often am known on this show as Mr. Vitola. I believe this is the first time that that's been referred to. there it is.
You're bringing it back. For the first time.
Yep. So, I love my sizes. The size is the size is the size. It is a very specific thing. A Corona, 5.5 by 42. Petite Corona is 5.125 by 42. A Robusto is 4.875 by 50. A Churchill is 7.47. A Double Corona is 7.625 by 49. There are set specific sizes for Vitolas. So when you see people who put out a Robusto at 54 by 6, that's not really a Robusto per the typical Cuban Vitola sizes. So a Hermoso number 4 is not a Robusto, but it is very close to it. It is exactly 5 inches and a 48 ring gauge. So a little thinner, a little longer than what is actually referred to as a Robusto in traditional Cuban cigar sizes. So there you go.
So what you're saying is that whole Shakespeare, rose is a rose by any other name, is only works one way.
Yeah.
If you call this Vitola by another name, that's okay. But if you call something else by another name, this Vitola, that's not okay.
Look, Mr. Vitola said it's a 5 by 48. I think if you're going to look for what factory Vitola name means, it's the name of the size of the mold. So if they're going to reach for a specific mold, what is the name of that mold? And then what is the size that that corresponds to? So think of it in that manner. It'll be slightly different from Robusto. Now you understand.
All right. So I'm going to get this going. We're going to get this Mr. Vitola thing to catch on.
Mr. Vitola. Okay.
On your tombstone, Craig Vitola Schneider.
What is it? 4.375 by 42 is a Tre Petite Corona. and a 4x40 is a menudo. Ricky Martin loves that size.
More information than I bargained for.
No, the subset who understand bad 90s pop culture references and intimate knowledge of cigar vitola details, like, there were three people in the world who could understand that joke.
Yeah, but I bet you they got a Reddit somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. So
there's a group for anybody.
Tonight we're smoking the El Rey del Mundo Cuban El Rey del Mundo Choix Supreme, which is a 5x48 Hermoso number 4 vitola, roughly a robusto. It's been around in Cuba for decades, decades and decades and decades, possibly even back to the 1800s. Go ahead.
We mentioned it before we were recording, but maybe I zoned out and wasn't paying attention. I don't know. Is there a reason that you know of why it has a French title?
I don't, actually. I don't know why this specific vitola has a French name. That's an interesting question. It's not explained in the specific encyclopedia passage I read, but I could read more if we want to have even better radio.
That's okay. We may run into copyright issues if we go broadcasting.
If I go reading somebody else's publication. Except J.D. Salinger's. I feel like that all went public domain this year. Didn't I hear that?
I don't know.
I thought I read something just about that. Oh, well. So, the El Rey del Mundo is, oh man, it's one of my three favorite marcas. I love El Rey del Mundo's, I love Ramoniones, and man, in a pinch, I'd probably say Cohiba for the third, but any day of the week, I could probably slot something, one of three or four others, into that. So the El Rey del Mundo is always there. The Choix Supreme, that roughly Robusto size, is a great one for me in the El Rey offerings. The issue is that it has a little less of the bready sweetness that I love in some of the other El Rey offerings, and a little bit more of the, I'm not going to say strength, but more of the tobacco-centric flavor. Well, go ahead.
I actually was going to say this one feels more potent than I'm accustomed to with the Cuban offerings we've smoked. I'm going into this cigar fresh. I haven't smoked anything in recent hours, and it seems like I'm already feeling a little bit of an impact from it, only maybe a third of the way through the cigar.
I would say that is much more akin to age than the blend. this cigar tastes youthful to me. It's a little robust for a Cuban cigar, and I think that that's just generally because of how youthful it is in comparison to what I would typically smoke. But this is widely regarded to be a mild cigar, even though this offering, it's got a little bit of a different terroir impact.
And it definitely feels a little more rough around the edges with the flavor. It's not, the flavor doesn't even seem to, that the flavors have melded so much. They're, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. They're almost at odds. And I don't mean it's clashing, but it's not a, golly, I hate using the word smooth because idiots use the word smooth with cigars, but it's not a polished cigar right now.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that, that this is not polished. But the offering I had this morning was less sweet than this, I will say. And it didn't have any of the tea. I don't want to say overtone or undertone, because there's not really a hierarchy here. It seems more like you're hearing a conversation with three different people who are all talking at once, rather than, pardon me, rather than they're waiting for the others to finish or to work in harmony. There's just a lot going on together. And one of those flavors that I'm noticing being different from a lot of other Cuban cigars is a tea-like flavor. It's mild. It's not overwhelming, I should say, but it's there.
Cacophony of flavors rather than a symphony.
Yeah, and to that point, the fact that there are multiple flavors going on is a pretty interesting showing here. This is not a an overwhelmingly well-aged cigar, and yet it's got a lot going on, potentially, or it could have a lot going on. So I like that I'm finding that in something that is so youthful, because it's just, you know, it's one of those things. You get a younger cigar and it has a lot going on, you can pretty reasonably sense that it's going to continue to age gracefully, and those flavors are going to at least become a little more apparent and a better experience overall. So that's a pretty layman's hope or expectation for aging, but it's not, just because it's layman's doesn't mean that it's accurate or not accurate, excuse me.
And it speaks a little bit to the Bob McDuffies of the world who would say that they all taste like dirt for him. They all taste very similar in that there's more than just one thing going on with this cigar. It's not, you know, the haters of Cuban cigars would say, well, they all taste very similar. There's not much to them or whatever. They're all Cuban tobacco, so there's not a lot of variety there, those kinds of comments. And it kind of would speak against that even in a young cigar, you got a little bit more going on than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you put five cigars next to each other and you smoke them over the course of 10 years, they're going to gradually veer off from each other in terms of where they've begun to where they end. And with this one already starting a fair distance away from some of the other offerings, that's pretty good to me. but
yeah, it's like the comparison of using a compass. Take off with a compass heading and you're 1 degree off, it doesn't matter in just a short period of time. But if you fly across the country 1 degree off, you're going to miss Los Angeles by a pretty good margin.
Yeah, that's a very vital bit of knowledge, I would say. El Rey del Mundos are one of those cigars for me that I've really lucked into a few boxes of irreplaceable vintage sticks over my life. There was a vendor out of Switzerland named Gerard Perrieffi, something like that, Gerard and Sons, and they had been around for decades. So I happened to develop a bit of a relationship with one of the tobacconists there, and one day I asked them, hey, do you have any vintage cigars? And they said, sure, here's a list. They sent me a list of a dozen boxes that they had. And they had 10 or 12 boxes of El Rey del Mundo Lonsdales from the 70s. And they were for sale for $200 a box. Which is essentially, at that point, it was essentially 12% over new production. It was barely an increase. So I bought a few of those boxes, and they were like smoking a cup of tea that had milk in it. They were so, milk and sugar in it. They were sweetened. They were creamy. They were bursting with this kind of floral herbaceous tea flavor. And then they finished the cigar in the final third, finished to like a sweet yeasty baking spice bread. Like a dessert bread, like a quick bread, like a zucchini bread or a banana bread that your mom would make. You know, it was just unbelievable how flavorful these were and how easy it was to pick out different foods that you had eaten and how the smoke tasted. So I tended to work my way backwards. I knew I liked some El Rey del Mundos, but I didn't know how spectacular they could be. And I had those, saw the finish line first, worked my way backwards, and then started getting some Schwa Supremes and gosh, the Tainos, which is the Churchill version. I bought a couple boxes of those, and Grandes de España, essentially their Lancero. And now they're just one of those staples that I really have a hard time living without in terms of what I want to keep in my cellar. So I love them. These are trending well, really well. Now, I will say again, that first one that was pretty crappy this afternoon or this morning, that doesn't bode well. You don't want a box to be so inconsistent that one of them is worth throwing out halfway through and the other one is enjoyable. But it appears that when they actually make contact, they're hitting it in the right direction.
Yeah.
So. Say it again.
I said, I'm with you.
Mm. Well, we killed 15, 20 minutes just me yapping about this cigar. So what do you say we pick out a few key news stories and move on? I don't know if we've got much enthusiasm tonight to have a glass of rum and some raunchy conversation like we have had in the past, but maybe we could share a few news stories and a laugh or two. What do you say?
Let's do it. Manos a la obra.
Manos a la... No. Manos al el trabajo. Okay. I'm making it happen.
Bringing it back for the first time.
Uh-huh.
You're a trendsetter, Greg.
Mr. Vitola says... All right. Go ahead.
All right. Let's let the motorcycle pass.
Now that's fair enough.
Yep. Love those guys. Anywho, let's see. Since our last recording, a number of things have transpired that are newsworthy. I guess we can hit a couple of the high points. One that kind of made some waves, but really and truly is not in any way a surprise, was that Facebook, and of course, to include Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, has decided to prohibit alcohol and tobacco sales and giveaways and trading and whatnot on their platforms and between private individuals. Man, I'm so posting this video. It's going to be an audio episode. Anyway, the prohibition is for private individuals. That means they are going to have their eyes open and human scanners out there looking for evidence that people are buying, selling, trading, giving away tobacco products or alcohol products through their platforms, and work to shut down that practice. And have already made the rules with some exceptions, the exceptions being private individuals can't. And if you are an honest to goodness brick and mortar operation, I don't know what it means to prove that or how you would demonstrate that. But you can have those kinds of things on your page as long as your page is age restricted, so that people, underage people, cannot participate or whatever, which is an easy setting. It's an easy thing to do. But as far as people just selling things through groups and communities and pages on Facebook or Instagram, that is a thing of the past. That's a done deal. Should not be happening going forward.
You know, this gets to a topic I know I have shared time and time again. I feel that it is a business's right to make the decision about whether or not to allow smoking or smoking paraphernalia or sales of tobacco products. I respect and agree with the choice of a business to decide for themselves. That being said, I don't know why they would allow shops and not allow individuals. Why is this a partial thing? I'm just left with kind of a head scratcher there.
Well, I think it's Well, Facebook has proven time and again, they're not responsible with people's data. They're not responsible with a lot of things. And I'm assuming there would be some liability to them as a platform if they permitted people to just buy and sell age-restricted products willy-nilly. I mean, you could have a group and some dude selling to some 14-year-old kid, and you know, that I don't know what liability would come about for them. Whereas if it's an established brick-and-mortar shop, then that shop has some responsibility to be sure that the person they're selling to or advertising to or giving away or whatever is an appropriate audience.
But doesn't that still come to the exact same argument that we used to talk about when the smoking bans were being implemented and we discussed that? That why does a rule have to be set when something is already in violation of a different rule? So I guess it's not legal for that person to sell to the 14-year-old. So what is the onus for Facebook to make it a specific thing that they're, how do I want to say this? What is the responsibility that Facebook is taking on by saying we are going to police this and prevent it from happening, when therefore what they would also be doing is essentially setting a precedent that any illegal activity that takes place on Facebook, they are going to be responsible for policing. It seems like them getting their hands dirty here is only going to open up the door for them to have to get their hands dirty about everything. And that does not seem like a smart business model. How do you police 2 billion users?
Right. And what happens when you have failed? Facebook, you said you're policing this. You said you're enforcing this. And look what's been going on.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It something is just a head scratcher. I don't know if their dedicated team who's going to seek out nothing but this is one person. You know, I mean, is it that simple that there's no chance they can stop everything? So their dedicated team is just a ruse to say, yeah, we've got people handling this. You know, I don't know.
I don't know. I know they rely on their own people and they rely on the community to report them to. There are plenty of smoke Nazis out there just looking for an opportunity to turn some money in to get it shut down.
Yeah, I mean...
They have not allowed, by their terms of service, have not allowed marketing or advertising for tobacco-related things for years. Going all the way back to when I started the Cigarmy, they kept sending me these things. Well, you get $50 free of advertising or whatever, and I would say, okay, and set up an ad through their thing to use the credit, and it would run, and then it would almost immediately be shut down and have them tell me, you can't do tobacco. Your website breaks our terms of service because it endorses or promotes the use of tobacco. So that's not anything new. It's just a strengthening of really what was already there.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this pans out. I have seen some groups that have had minor involvement with rename themselves in the last couple weeks.
What I saw was a flood of genuine manufacturers started their own page and set the controls up for the age restrictions and all. I mean, almost immediately, a dozen or more popped up and invitations to join this page or like this page or join this community or whatever. That was an actual cigar company. I think they were getting all their ducks in a row to be sure they were on board with the new guidelines.
Yep. The way of the future. We gotta adapt if we're gonna survive.
I also still see a few, what do you call them, like the subscription things where you pay a flat fee each month and get some cigars. Those are still operating. I don't know, like I said earlier, I don't know what it means or what it takes to prove that you meet the requirements to be a brick and mortar operation. Some of these are just guys out of their house.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
shipping cigars together. So, I don't know.
Hell, I mean, Dog Watch had one of those. Mm-hmm. So, oh, well, we'll see how this goes. It's an interesting story as we consider interesting being things that are changing what we've come to expect. So, next here, I see something that sounds very, very similar to a cigar store somewhat close to my house, but this time it's going to be close to where your house was in Florida.
Yeah. Cigars International will sometime soon. I'm not exactly sure of an opening date. It's not in the imminent future, but they're going to open a large retail operation in Wesley Chapel, Florida, which was, I lived 45 minutes to an hour from Tampa, and this Wesley Chapel is north of Tampa. And this place sounds humongous. It's 9,500 square feet, which is a pretty dang sizable cigar store. Huge, in fact. I can't think of another one that size in Tampa. Tampa Humidor had like a 1,500 foot humidor and somewhere around 6,000 or plus square feet total. And it was pretty big. 9,500 feet is a big operation. It's going to have all the typical stuff. Indoor and outdoor smoking areas, a large humidor of as of yet unannounced size, but presumably Cigars International is going to have just about anything you want. Even a conference room, you can hold meetings there. And it's a little bit bothersome they would do this now that I'm not living in the area, because I could have, you know, I worked from home for several years. I could have worked out of that place.
Yeah, one of those things, man. Ugh. If only it had been 5 years sooner. Well, 5 years sooner, you wouldn't have been able to have it for very long, would you?
Yeah. It was back in the day, Google, you know, Google always tracked where I was going with my phone for a long time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And it kept assigning my work as Tampa Humidor.
Oh, get out of here.
It constantly did it. And because I would work out of there sometimes, because it was not far from my actual office, and I would just use that as a staging area. And I had a contractor that I did a lot of, he was an environmental contractor. I did a lot of work with him, and his office was nearby there, and that's where we met. That was just where we conducted business all the time.
Well, I have, I was going to say Casa Fuente. Casa de Monte Cristo, in Countryside, Illinois, which is about 20 miles from my house. So not exactly next door. And, you know, you're getting closer to the city, so nothing's exactly easy to get to when you got to head east. But that being said, it sounds very, very similar to what you're discussing. Probably two levels that are each 4 or 5,000 square feet. The lower level of Casa de Monte Cristo being private and an entire lounge, a couple conference rooms that you could use as your office, no cost, full bar, a lot of tables where you could sit, a theater where they would show movies or sporting events, lots of that sort of really enjoyable, amenities. So that's kind of I'm not surprised to see that. It sounds like it's something that has been a precedent that's worked and is hopefully continuing to do so for the industry. Let's get something that stays strong.
Yeah, and, you know, there is a tie-in with this. I don't know, a year or so ago, Cigars International's parent, was it STG? They bought out Thompson Cigar there in Tampa, and my understanding is they're going to actually put the people to work that were working at Thompson that would have otherwise been out of a job. They're going to give them jobs in the new operation.
Hmm. That's kind of interesting. Well, that'll be a fun one. You'll get back to that area every once in a while, so you can certainly check it out.
I was actually at a Casa de Monte Cristo in Nashville for the summer. We went down to Nashville for the weekend to visit my nephew, and we went over. It was not nearly such a big operation. It was considerably smaller than the two we're talking about right now.
Hmm.
It was a nice enough place. Had a fantastic barbecue place a couple of doors over called the Peg Leg Porter. It was really good.
I'll refrain from the jokes that come with that name. Well,
what else
we got? We have yet more eye-rolling information about Puro Sabor, the Nicaraguan Cigar Festival. The pricing, $1,600 a ticket. Find your own way there, and your own lodging, correct?
No, the lodging, I believe, is included in that $1,600.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, it's lodging and food as well. And it says all the cigars you can smoke.
Well, I guess the big thing here, we kind of dropped the lead. What is that? Missed the lead? Skipped the lead? I don't know, whatever that phrase is. The item that we really should be focusing on here is that Puro Sabor is actually coming back. It was skipped, I believe, the last 2 years, correct?
At least 1 year, yeah, after the ruckus that was going on in Nicaragua. I guess it's still, there's a lot of unrest, but not nearly to the degree that it was last year. So the event is back on for 2020.
Well, it's back on. If you've got a spare $2,300, probably $2,400 total, and you've got your white shirt, I believe there's also a white shirt event down there. Why don't you head on down? Sure to be a lot of good cigars, and no doubt it's always an enjoyable experience to spend time in Nicaragua.
Yeah. I mean, heck, somebody wants to pay me $1,600 a ticket, I can get you a fun week of cigars as well.
Let's do it.
Do it.
Well, that's about it for the interesting stories. This last one, I'm reading this thinking that I should have some idea who this gentleman is. Is this a story that we've talked about before?
We have. When the news came up, Jose Dominguez, which is the Victor Sinclair manufacturer. The factory's here in Santiago, and it's freaking enormous. I've never been in the place, but it takes up a vast amount of land. It's in a peculiar place. It's not in Tamboril with the smaller operations, or in the Zona Francas that are in the city, or Tamboril as well. It's kind of in the Gurabo, which is not especially dense with cigar factories, but that's where it is. And we talked about this months ago now, last year sometime, that he had been accused. It was alleged that he had, or his company, at least someone in the company, including him, with knowledge, had purposefully defrauded the U.S. government of SCHIP dollars by doctoring the values of the cigars when they were imported, so that far less SCHIP tax was paid, to the tune of $1.8 million, I think. And so I guess it's gone through grand jury, and he's been indicted, and at the request of the U.S. government, the Dominican government came and arrested him about a week and a half ago and took him into custody. So I imagine he's on his way or back in the States now, getting ready for trial at some point.
Hmm. Well, that sucks. Don't be an idiot.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. government is a glittering gem of ineptitude in most respects, but when it comes to collecting tax dollars, they don't typically screw around. So he's facing some pretty stiff penalties if he's found guilty of it.
Well,
it's like 5 years in federal prison, up to 5 years, and a pretty hefty fine.
Yeah, that makes that $1.8 million maybe not seem so worth it.
Yeah. You can't buy back 5 years.
Well, Better him than me. Moving on.
I do not know him. I met his son. His son seemed like a nice enough guy. I talked to him a little bit at an IPCPR a few years ago. But seemed like a nice enough dude, but like I said, I've never met the dad. I don't know him.
Well, we got one more news story here, but you want to skip that? Or I mean, it looks like you want to skip it.
The last one?
Oh, no, never mind. I scrolled down. We have that one, and then the one that you have crossed out. We don't need to do the one you crossed out.
Yeah, I don't think there's really enough to even talk about there. But the other thing, this is, I put this on the forum. This came out as rumor and innuendo around the industry, but has since been confirmed by personnel at Lane Limited, which is a pipe tobacco or a tobacco importer, that a number of the Dunhill blends, pipe tobacco blends, that have been unavailable in the U.S. for some time are coming back. But they're coming back under the Peterson label rather than Dunhill. My guess is this is just the latest in a long, drawn-out history of Dunhill disassociating itself with tobacco. It wants to, I guess, as a high-end men's accessory thing, and somewhat cutting off tobacco ties. And so these blends will be, they're claimed to be the same, made in the same place. I don't even recall who's got the blending responsibilities for those blends at this point. They change hands pretty regularly. It's just going to be in a different tin label with the Peterson name instead of Dunhill on it. So those of you who really like the Dunhill blends, and by the way, not all of them are coming back, but many of them, if you head over to our forum, I posted a screenshot of the information that was sent out to retailers that has a list of the old blends and what they're going to be called and how they're going to be labeled as the new ones. But if you're into those Dunhill blends as they stand for the past decade or so, then you have good news. They're coming back.
You know, I shared some questions about this, and the more I've thought about it, the more answers I've gotten. I just still have more questions. I don't know, man. Take this cigar. All right, here's a perfect example. One, age plays into it. Two, the terroir plays into it. Did it get a lot of rain this year? Did it not get a lot of rain? Are they going to overcompensate? Or are they just going to follow that old blend? Are they going to try to make it similar to what they think people will expect? Are pipe smokers typically going to be smart enough to not judge a book by its cover, the cover being, you know, buy tin, open tin, smoke tobacco? You know, where are we going to be here in 5 years? That's more interesting to me.
Yeah. I think the FDA thing that's the dark days coming for cigars will be much darker for pipe tobacco. It's just such a small segment. It doesn't have the voice that it's going to be hammered in the U.S. I don't know what's going to happen there. But as far as pipe tobacco's being smart enough or believing or whatever, I don't know, because my experience with the average pipe smoker is that no matter the assurance, they're going to swear it's different. It doesn't matter. I mean, you change the typeface or font on a tin and they swear it's a different tobacco entirely. And so I don't know. I don't know what the reception is going to be. It's going to be, my guess, is going to be the guys that have been smoking Dunhill for the last 40 years are going to just see it as another difference and another change that they've been through many times before. And they're going to lament the disappearance of their favorite era of this tobacco and how different it is now, and they're not going to like it, even if it's the same. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You don't have to go very far to find examples of that in all aspects of things that people have enjoyed in life. Hell, I mean, just look at Star Wars. For Pete's sake, you'd have thought in 1999, in April of 1999, you'd have thought there was nothing that could be done ever to ruin Star Wars for people. And well, that's changed a bit. 1999 certainly, May of 1999 certainly did that a touch, and I would sure say that December of 2017 did that an awful lot too. So I think that people really enjoy complaining because they forget that they have maybe changed a little bit themselves, and they expect everything else to stay exactly how they want it, when what they want might necessarily not be possible. Yeah. But
you know, there I have a very specific example in my own experience that I am undoubtedly falling for the same thing and totally buying into it, but it was the dang Oliva O, that cigar, when they changed the bands from those velvet cloth bands to the paper ones. I swear it's a different cigar. I talked to two reps who swore on Greg that it was the same cigar, but it was different to me, and I quit smoking them. I loved them before that, and I didn't care for them at all after. It was nothing but a band change.
Dude, I got to admit, Padron Aniversario was the Aniversario band used in their Nicaraguan factory. Padron Anniversary in the 90s and early 2000s was the band used in their Honduran factory. And it would even say, the box would say Anniversary, or the box would say Anniversario. I swore they were different cigars. Swore they were different cigars. If it said Anniversary, I didn't want it. If it said Anniversario, it was what I wanted. It was going to be a better cigar. Yep. Why would they have two different blends? Come on. Why would they have two different blends and call it a different name? You know, I mean, I don't know. We're a fickle thing. As my father-in-law says, we're a virus with legs. Hey, man, I hear you had a really good cigar today. Do we want to talk about what else we've been smoking?
Sure.
There's that Tennessean enthusiasm I love so much.
Well, you know, I just a very dirty trick played on me. You smoked a cigar from D.C. I don't know, several couple months ago now, and loved it. It was the Park Avenue from Gurkha, and went on and on about it, and DC has turned us on to a number of really good cigars that are overlooked because sometimes their pricing is lower and people maybe have a little disdain for them because of the pricing structure or whatever. And so I thought, well, maybe this is another gem. Maybe this is the Gurkha Shaggy when it first came out. That was a wonderful cigar. And the last cigar that I cared for from them, but you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this one's worth smoking. But I was tricked. I was fooled. You were lying. Just underhanded backstabbing trick. So I smoked today, just so I'd be able to talk about tonight. And I told you I opened it up, and it felt radically underfield, very light hand, and I was concerned, but I clipped it, and turned out that misgiving was unfounded. It actually was built very well, burned beautifully, evenly, perfect, strong ash, nothing to complain about, but the flavor, and maybe you got the best one ever made, and I got something else, but yeah, it was not my cup of tea. I thought it smelled and tasted very much like 95% of the cigars in the market around 1995 or 96, right in and after the boom, when everything that could possibly be slapped into a cigar mold was, and immediately dumped into the market. It was very young and grassy to me. I did not have the same experience you did. So I think you're lying to me.
Well, I have two things here. First of all, your audio quality seems to be changing for me. So it sounded like you had one of those Gurkha Park Avenues, and you thought that it was fabulous, and that I told you 100% truthful information, and you found a terrific bundle cigar that you can invest in. Correct?
I don't think my audio varied that much.
Oh, good. So you did like it. Okay. Well, I did not smoke one of those this week or this past month, perhaps I should say. But I will say that my experiences with those has been limited. I talked about it on the forum that this cigar had some really, really enjoyable, extremely mild, light flavors. A lot of that, 90s natural, when cigars had two different wrappers. It was a natural or a Maduro. A lot of that natural, reminiscent flavor to it. But it was done well. It wasn't Don Pepe, It wasn't a Don Jose cigar, a no-name that somebody made $50,000 because the cigar industry was booming in 1997. Wasn't that. There was more to it. It was enjoyable, but the cigar overheated, and it did have a clear, defined end point when it was probably 40% of the cigar remaining. I put it down. It was very good for what it was, but it was not perfect. I would say that if that was an inexpensive cigar, it was well worth a companion if you're doing other things. I hope you at least got that out of it. And if you didn't have that enjoyment, that's a shame. Because what I had when I smoked that was pleasantly surprising, because I'm not a Gurkha fan. And I am certainly not a Connecticut wrapped cigar fan. So
are you hearing me at all right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you hear anything I said? Because it did not sound as if you did.
You just got really quiet, because it did not sound what?
As if you had heard anything I said.
Oh, no, I heard everything that you said. It was unfortunate, but I'm processing it very differently. Let's put it that way.
Okay. I did notice that the band says smooth blend on it.
Well, you mentioned earlier how much you enjoy when the intelligent cigar smoking populace uses the phrase smooth cigar, so I get it.
Yeah, there are some signal words I pick up on.
Yeah. Creamy is another one.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I had a couple more I took off. The only other thing I think I will mention is Virginia Number One, which is a pipe blend from McBaron. And I don't believe I talked about it on the show. I opened this up before we went to the U.S. But this blend, I put away several tins of it, 2005 to 2010. And I opened a tin then, and I wouldn't swear to it. I don't remember the date on it, but it's a decade or more old. And the reason was, I stopped smoking it because it bit my tongue like a rabid badger. Just tore me up every time I'd smoke it. And so I stopped and just forgot about it. Threw it in the back of the Slagle's closet. And so I pulled one out and last year, I guess. And I opened it up right before we went back, just to see if it was any different now. And it is and it's not. I smoked it. Right off the bat, I let it dry a little bit and had a great experience. Very nice, smooth and creamy. No, a very sweetened, caramelly almost flavor. from the blend. It's a Virginia blend, of course, by the name. And just had a good experience. It burned well, tasted really good. I enjoyed it a lot. And then I came back from the States and dipped into that jar and quickly realized that the bite is indeed from the moisture level, even after all those years in the tin. I have played around with it this week and noticed that if I dry it considerably further than I would normally dry a pipe tobacco, then I have a much better experience than if I let it have any moisture whatsoever. If I don't dry it completely, it still bites me to no end, which is not uncommon. It seems to be a McBaron thing for my palate, with the exception of Navy Flake, most things. The Vintage Syrian as well, but it's off the market now. But McBaron still makes the Navy Flake, and I love that blend. I think that is one of the better tobaccos available in the world today. But most of their blends do tend to bite me. And this one, I can now understand that I just have to dry it more than I would most blends, and I'll have a good experience. And if I don't do that, it's going to bite my tongue, and I'm going to be irritable and foul for 3 days and not be tasting properly. And
yeah. What? You?
Yeah. My world kind of revolves around taste, you know. I like food, I like cigars, I like pipe tobacco, and when I can't taste, I'm even less friendly than normal.
Yeah, you know, I all kidding aside, I get it. You know, it makes a hell of a lot of sense that something that shouldn't bother you and does is frustrating. Beyond belief, no doubt about it. And I'm not going to fault you for that. So, it sucks. You don't want to have to experience that, and I don't blame you.
Yeah, yeah. So, what you got?
Well, these are only a few of them. I'm sure I've had a lot more cigars in the last 6 weeks or so. Luckily, it's been summertime. You know, a little hot. We've touched 80 a time or two, so can't go outside those days. The one that I'll talk about first is a new one for me. Well, new one to talk about on the show. It's the Illusion ECCJ, the Toro size, roughly a little bit longer than a Toro. I'm going to guess this is probably 6.5, but really an interesting cigar. The ECCJ, when it came out in 2009, I'm going to say 2009, for the 15th anniversary of the European Cigar Cult Journal publication, Illusion and Santa Damiana were the two cigars that were released to commemorate that. That Illusion ECCJ came out in one size only. I believe it was a traditional Corona Gorda, 5 5/8 by 46. And it knocked it out of the park. It wasn't available really at the show. It wasn't something that you were going to go to your local tobacconist and buy afterwards. It was really limited production. But I heard more people talk about that than maybe any other cigar that I had smoked at any IPCPR I had been to. It was flawless, quite frankly. It became the Epernay line. A lot of people, going back to our previous conversation, a lot of people didn't believe Dion that it was the exact blend, because Epernay did not have the acclaim that the ECCJ, the original, did. But Epernay itself was still a well-regarded cigar. Dion has since released the ECCJ line again. I believe he also did a 25th, or does that sound right? An ECCJ 25, maybe?
15th and a 20. I don't think there's a 25 yet, right?
15 and a 20, is that what it was? Okay.
I think so.
So he has since done a 20, and then I believe that these are now released as just a normal line, if I recall correctly. And so I picked one up this week at a cigar store as I was driving through a town, and I smoked it, and it was good. I think that it suffered from what a lot of Robusto suffer from, or what that Park Avenue probably suffered from. It had good tobacco in it, but a lot of lesser tobacco to make it the size that it ended up being molded at. It probably would have been a fabulous Lonsdale at 42, but instead it was a 49 or a 50, and it was a little too much, a little watered down, not so concentrated, not so overly complex, harder to pick up, but it's still a good cigar. I would reach for it again.
The 25th just came out a couple months ago.
Okay, so I confess I don't have the band with me. It's in my truck. I don't remember if this is a 25th or if this is just ECCJ normal. So, but it's it was a good cigar. I would absolutely go for another one. It was not overly expensive. I don't remember it being any more than 10, 11 bucks. I'd love it if it was $6, but you don't find too many of those these days. So recommend. Give it a shot. So,
I got nothing else to talk about. I'm just here to listen to you now, man.
No, I was taking a puff off my cigar. Yow! And dropping my cigar. Taking a puff off my cigar to make sure that it stayed lit. But now I think I knocked the cherry off. Hold on.
Vitola man.
Vitola man. Next one that I'll mention, and I'll only say this last one here. Another one of those Tatuaje Regios, or Regios, however that's pronounced, from that box that I cracked for a show 6-8 months ago. That first cigar that I smoked for the show was darn near flawless. It was brilliant. I remember talking about it in such high regard that I smoked another one the next week. My first opportunity to have a cigar after that, I lit up another one of these. I noticed that my show cigar, which I had been keeping in my singles drawer, smoked much better than the one that I pulled out of this box that had been in long-term storage. This cigar today, or when I smoked this, was much more akin to the latter. It was good. It was not breathtaking like that first one. And I pulled it out of the box to smoke it. I had not been keeping it in the singles drawer for a bit. I think that tells me that these Regios have decades that they can age for. This Tat Brown line is made of some serious stuff. At least it was 10 years ago. I don't know. I have not had them enough or often enough to know if the blend has really changed on these. But it was something that makes me think that these cigars are one you can buy, forget about, and enjoy in a long time coming and really have a heck of a treat. So this example was enjoyable, but still not blossomed like that first one. It had not had the time to breathe. And I think that this is just another showing of where these are compared to where they can be. And where they can be is, man, oh, man, hopefully in everybody's humidor because they're that good.
Coup
is right. So I am getting close on this El Rey. Do you want to give us your final thoughts?
Sure. I actually put mine down. It was a little bit brash to me, and it just seemed all of our earlier discussion about maybe it being young, it just kind of got increasingly so to me.
Yeah.
It was a little bit in your face with that, and even though I guess your description says that these are known as being a milder cigar, it's having an impact on me. No, nothing serious, not like a Aussie or anything, but just kind of a little bit of a cold sweat. Time for me to put it down.
Yeah.
The flavors were enjoyable enough, but I would have liked it if maybe they had let up just a little bit at some point rather than continuing to intensify with that that crispness that really kind of cutting a little bit.
Yeah, I can understand that. I've got an inch and a half left on this. It's certainly not a fantastic cigar. It's youthful. It's got some tannins. It's got some bitterness. It's, you know, we talked about it, how it was not a unified flavor coming off of it. But I'm still able to smoke it. I don't have much more to go, but I am enjoying it. I am certainly one to put a cigar down if it's not giving me anything positive out of it, and I'm still going on it, so that'll tell you something. I wish these were sweeter. I wonder if that sweetness is an evolution or if that's something that's just not in the current blend as much as it could be, A, from aging, or B, from a previous version of these. I'm not as well. I'm not at all intimate with the Cuban cigar market these days, at all. So I couldn't tell you what the thought was on the 20. Let's see, this was probably boxed early in the year, so that would have been the 2017 harvest. I couldn't tell you what was going on weather-wise in early 2017. So maybe this is something that just went into overwatering or harsh high heat conditions to develop a little bit more of that harshness or nicotine than what I'm used to and that what you experienced. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. Not a bad cigar, not as good as these can be by a long stretch of the imagination, but it's nice to see where the journey begins on so many of these cigars that I've had the luxury of having with age.
I can dig it.
Cool. Well, close us out, my man.
All righty. I think we originally had a plan to do this tonight, but we will do it next time around. Next time, if you folks would like to join us for episode 199, we will be smoking an Unbanded, which was a third Unbanded sent from Jay Ledoux. It, of course, will have a different number once we publish, but that's the plan anyway. But in the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can get us by email to greg@halfashed.com or kip@halfashed.com or through any of the typical social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or most importantly and probably easiest and definitely most tobacco friendly is our own little forum over at Half Ashed. We'd love to have you join us over there as well.
Amen to that. Well, Kip, thank you for all of your diligence in getting us up and running this evening. I was rearing to go. It's been a long time since we recorded. There's been probably two or three other times that we were trying in the last month and a half, and I'm glad that tonight finally happened, my man. Thank you. So as I so often do, I have a dedication for tonight's show, and this one goes out to every single person in the world except for the person who decided to kill Hangouts. So, from all of you, from
and
all of us,
one motorcycle guy,
and yeah, well, all of the motorcycle guys tonight. So, like 7,499,999,993 people of the world, this show goes out to you. From all of us here at Half Ash to all of you, thank you so much. And in the wise words of our esteemed, oh gosh, what do I call him? Mentor, Mr. Dale Roush. Good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.